Om Shri Sai Ram. From the land of vibrant colors, cosmic light, selfless love, deep joy, and even deeper peace. This is Karuna signing in live on this 8th day of November 2018. Today is Thursday and the current time in the ashram is exactly 38 minutes past 9 a.m. IST. I'm getting so excited I signed in 2 minutes too early. I'm sure for a good reason you'll soon discover. Good morning and Diwali greetings to all the listeners of Radio Sai. The weather conditions at Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe, are actually picture perfect today. Pleasant and breezy with plenty of sunshine but not too hot. Mr. Golden Sun is being winter friendly and the temperatures these days are finally in my comfort zone, which is about 18 and 19 degrees at night. Daytime highs of 30 or so. And with the wintry sun, no humidity, and that very special breeze which blows only in our ashram, I believe, it feels just lovely to be here these days. Of course, for some of us, it feels divine to be here any day of the year because, we just love being in Prashanthi Nilayam in the divine presence. But there's something very special about the month of November. And why do I say so? Well, the ashram right now is resplendent in the bright colors of Gujarat, the state that is celebrating its new year in the mandir, and the festival of lights is on. So I just want to take you down memory lane to a time long, long ago when I was a student at Anandpur and the dinosaurs walked on earth, and it was 1983. And at that time, there was an Akhand Bhajan happening which concluded on Diwali Day. So it was on November 4th, 1983, I believe, that Bhagwan Baba personally handed out Diwali greeting cards to a whole bunch of students and devotees in the portico in the prayer hall at the conclusion of this Akhand Bhajan, which I told you coincided with Diwali that year. Here is his message from that historic card. And I quote Bhagwan, "When a lamp is lit from another, there are two where there was but one. The first one did not stop emitting light. You can light a million lamps from one, but yet the first will not suffer a jot. Love too is like that. Share it with a million and it will still be as bright as when it was alone. And then Baba goes on to say, "When the lamp of love is shining, God manifests. Keep it burning bright and pure. God persists. Allow all to light their lamps from it. God showers grace." So if you want him to manifest, unquote, of course, if you want to God to manifest, we have to light the lamp of love and keep it shining. If you want God to persist, we have to keep it burning bright and pure. And if we want a shower of his grace, we have to allow all to light their lamps from it. With those sacred words, I have some important question for all our listeners. So I urge you, dear sisters and brothers, to be very attentive. Now, as you may have realized, coming up on November 10 and 11, that is Saturday and Sunday, we are going to rock the world. It's going to be a rocking weekend by the devotees of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the Paripurna Avatar of the Kali Age, because we are going to rock this planet Earth and its surrounding atmosphere with sacred energy. The world will transform into Prashanthi Nilayam, from Japan in the Far East to Hawaii in the Far West, from Canada in the North to Fiji Islands in the South, and beyond. We will envelop the cosmos with Jai Jai Kar of the Lord, singing his or perhaps her glory and offering our love and going Om Shivai, Shambho Shankar, Om Shivai. We're not going to stop for a long period of time, for about 48 hours, because it's a 24 hours uninterrupted bhajan, akhanda bhajan. And we will pray and send out divine energy and glorify the Lord and purify ourselves. And because of the different time zones around the globe, this fiesta, this festival of God's glory will continue for 48 hours in essence. So my question to you this morning, dear listeners of Radio Sai, is, when did the tradition of Akhanda Bhajan begin? Now, when you email me your answers, I need a 3-part answer, and please pay attention. First of all, I need your full name. Secondly, I want to know your location, by which I mean which city, which country. And finally, could you please trace the date or origin of when Akhand Bhajan began? I would love to hear from you the date or the origin, at least the year when Akhand Bhajan's, the tradition began, your full name and your full location, please. I don't need your apartment number or house number. I need your city and your country. And with that, may I repeat my question? When did the tradition, in which year did the tradition of Akhand Bhajans begin? I'll be eagerly waiting for your answer. And on the other side of the first file that I'm going to play for you, I'll come back and announce the names of those who got the answer right. And I will also play an audio clip that explains the origin of Akhand Bhajans. With that, may I remind you, you can reach me at my email ID, asapkaruna@radiosai.org. That would be K for kite, ARUNA@radiosai.org. Karuna@radiosai.org. And the question remains, when did the tradition of, in which year did the tradition of Akhand Bhajan begin? And as we get prepared to rock the world with the name of our sweet Lord, I have lined up a very nice program for you this morning, which will go on till 11:30 because the files are a bit longer. So that's why I started 2 minutes early to save on time. That's not being very economical, but, I'm going to bring you a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories with Dr. Lakshminath Sripada. Dr. Lakshminath Sripada is in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Bishu Prushti of Radio Sai. On the other side of this interview, I'm going to announce the correct answer to the question that is being posed and read out the names of those who got it right and bring you a short audio clip about the origin of Akhand Bhajan. And this will be followed by the remaining part of the interview that we aired last week of Mr. Ryuko Hira. The remaining part I will play today. With that, we will reach 11:30 today. So, dear listeners, I urge you, it's a power-packed show. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony, your live connection to Prashanthi Nilayam, India, at all times. And please start sending me, emailing me your answer to the question, in which year did the tradition of the Akhand Bhajan begin? I'll be eagerly looking forward to your answers. And now I'm very pleased to play for you, debut this first-time interview, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories with Baba's former student, Dr. Lakshminath Sripada, in conversation with Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti. Enjoy the rest of the show, and I'll be back right after this interview to share the answer with you.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. Today is October 21st, 2018. The Dasara celebrations in Prashanthi Nilayam just concluded. And just like any festival in Prashanthi Nilayam, which has its own charm, the fervor of Dasara is the beautiful vibes of Vedam chanting as the Yagnam goes on in the Purnachandra Auditorium. And you have so many devotees joining the priest in chanting the Rudram. You have many former students who come back to spend blissful 7 days, 9 days, at least 3 days in Prashanthi Nilayam. And one of them who was here for Dasara in 2018 with us is Brother Lakshminath Sripada. He is someone who took to Vedam chanting when he was a student. That was one of the greatest gifts that he considers Bhagwan gave him when he had the chance to study at his lotus feet way back in 1991. He studied till 1996. He did his bachelor's and his master's in chemistry. Bhagwan blessed him with a gold medal. Academically, he was brilliant. So he received the top rank for his master's from Bhagwan's hand during the convocation ceremony in 1996. But the greatest blessing that he considers Bhagwan gave him is this love for his lotus feet and this love for chanting Vedam. And being in Dasara has been such a powerful moment for him. After Bhagwan blessed him with the chance to study at his lotus feet. By divine design, he went on to do his PhD in Indian Institute of Science, and after that, he moved to the US to do his postdoc in North Carolina State University. Post that, he longed to come back to India, and again, Bhagwan opened doors very beautifully, and he came back in 2007 to India and served in many pharma companies, and currently he works as principal scientist in GMK Research. So his life is a saga of someone who longed to be at his presence, because he comes from a family of devotees. Swami ensured that he is married into a family who are full of devotees. His wife, Mrs. Revati Swapna, is a very active volunteer of Radio Sai Team Telugu Stream. So she is here very often helping in the production of many Telugu programs. In fact, even as we are recording now, there is a Telugu Live going on, a youth program where you have 50 youth who have come from a district of Andhra Pradesh, and in the Telugu stream, you have a 8 to 10 hour live program. So brother, along with his wife, they have dedicated their lives to his mission, and Swami has very graciously accepted their daughter in the Sri Satya Sai Primary School in Prashant Nilayam. So here is a family who longed to be at his feet. Swami gave them the chance to study, and now whatever they have received from Bhagwan, they want to offer it to Bhagwan in the best manner possible. It is that utsaha to live for Bhagwan that is making their lives so bright and so blissful. So with a lot of gratitude to Bhagwan for having blessed this conversation today, I welcome you, brother, to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories.
Thank you, Vishu. Offering my humble salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet, who is the master of the universe. Thank you once again. And as you rightly said, the Dashara celebrations and Vedam is really the vibrations of the Vedam chanting. I could enjoy once again after a few years when I came over here. It was really a great moment.
Brother, maybe you should go back in time and tell us the start of your journey. I know you come from a family of devotees. So how did it happen that you became a student of Bhagwan's university? When did that desire come? And how was it when you finally saw your name on the list of students accepted by Bhagwan for his college?
Yeah, surely. If I go back, as you said, my parents were Swami's devotees. And because of that, I had the opportunity to participate in various activities of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Samiti in Srikakulam district, and attend various service camps, and especially attend Balvikas. So from my childhood, I had attended the different levels of Balvikas, like group 1, 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. While attending bhajans, and like we were lucky that our family was into Swami's fold, so most of the discussions or everything was around going to bhajan or going to a service program or something like that. I remember we had all weekends also kind of revolving around that. And then once I completed my group 3 also, that was I think around 89 or something like that. And sometime during 1990, we received the certificates of completion of Group 3. Hmm. And that was a really amazing certificate at that moment, because it had Swami's signature on it, uh-huh, with the fast smile signature and a big certificate saying that I passed the Group 3.
And Swami
was
proud.
It was really a very proud moment, as you said. Hmm. And it was like very nice to see that certificate. And then just within a short while, we also got information that the applications for the new session of bachelor's will be taken at the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning.
Hmm. So that bachelor's was in sciences and commerce.
Sciences, commerce, yes. Yeah. So that was really, I did my intermediate in MPC, maths, physics, chemistry. And that was really exciting for me, because I thought, okay, some opportunity is there where I can also try to, I can apply, and if Swami's wish is there, I can study at his.
So you didn't think about engineering and
I didn't think about engineering much, though I did attempt to write an exam, but my more attention and focus was to come and study at Swami's college.
Mm.
So, there was also a small incident that time. What happened was that due to some other outside circumstances, our academic year got a little bit delayed.
Mm-hmm.
And normally our practice is that in May we have the entrance and June the academic session starts over here.
Yes.
But in that particular year of 1991, for Andhra Pradesh students especially,
mm-hmm.
our exams got postponed almost towards end of May and June. We were still writing our intermediate exams.
Oh-ho.
So we were worried, like, because the exam dates are already given from the institute and whether we'll be able to go or not, what is the situation?
So it was clashing with
exactly,
the kind entrance of, examination
it was
of
clashing
the
with
science
thing.
Institute.
And then luckily, means maybe all the students prayer to Swami who applied at that time kind of thing. So we were very pleased to receive that the entrance of the university dates have been postponed sometime in June.
Mm-hmm.
So once the exams are completed of intermediate, the students can come.
So it was done specially. So
yeah.
There was a special entrance.
Exactly.
Only for the students of Andhra Pradesh.
Yes, exactly. There was special entrance kind of the
wow.
for the students of Andhra Pradesh that time. And then we did come in over here. Initially, even there was a little bit of drama of Swami, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Just we were about to start, 1 or 2 days before, my mother was a little feeling a little uneasy. So she and my father and mother were discussing whether, like, will they be able to bring me over here for the written test or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Then I was telling them, somehow, please take me, I will write
mm-hmm.
exam.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come to a consensus that, yeah, then my mother brought me over here.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled for a couple of days, I think, in between buses, because Srikakulam is at the farthest corner of Andhra Pradesh, and here
mm-hmm.
we are at the downside. And then we landed here, and by Swami's grace, wrote the exam. And and during that time, Swami was not here. We learned that Swami is in Brindavan, Bangalore.
Yes.
So, that time we don't know, means, I might have seen Swami in my childhood, but after that I really, physical form I have not seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, after writing exam, we were free and we were sitting in bhajan hall almost, just after 2-3 rows, devotees first row, we are sitting and we are longing, it will be very nice if Swami comes now,
mm-hmm.
we can see him closely, all these thoughts are running
yes.
in mind.
Yes.
And, yeah, it happened like that for a day. And the next day, during that time, my mother said that, why don't you go and do some service? You see go into the canteen and ask them if they gave some service, you try to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I went and asked the members over there, they said that normally Sevadal will be there, but what you can do is you can take the plates after people have taken their food.
Mm.
You can take the plates and put it in the one place where they're designated. So that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very good. The greatest thing, we can get some opportunity to
yes,
do
sir.
Seva
mm-hmm.
and Prashandalyam.
Mm-hmm.
So I happily did that for a couple of days. And the time came when our results were announced.
Mm.
And the list was put up, it was during lunch time. And after lunch, I was doing this service of taking out the plates.
Mm.
And some other brothers of that time were also there. And they told, the list is put up, so we are going, you want to come.
Mm.
Then something was telling me in my mind that complete your work. Like the work that is assigned should be completed, like some message
yes.
in my mind behind. So I said, you guys go ahead, I'll finish this work and then I come. And then I finished, it took about half an hour or so, I finished, then I went, and when I went there, I was very glad to see that my name is on the list, and whatever Swami's instruction, that finish your work,
yes,
like Swami
yes.
says, work is worship, so
yes, yes.
That example, initially itself, Swami had told me that whatever work is assigned, try to finish as much as you can.
Somehow this whole concept of service had got so much ingrained,
yeah.
no? thanks
yeah.
to the family, thanks to the way Bhagavan had already sort of shaped you.
Yeah. Really, that is true. Because as I told in the beginning also, we had some opportunity to go to villages, do service, and some service in medical camps, various types of activities which the organization takes up.
Mm.
So I was really blessed to be part of that, and that did help.
So at that point also, you felt that Swami will be happy if, you know, if I finish the work and, you know, if I do the seva.
Exactly, yes.
You know, if my name has to come, it's better that I first finish my work and then go and see, you know, if Swami wills, it will be there.
Yeah, you rightly said, yeah, that was what is the thought. So, whatever work is given by, is given by Swami, so we should complete it, kind of.
Wow.
Maybe that was a thought at that time, I was too young, maybe
yeah.
you know many things, but...
Probably you didn't think so much, but at that age itself, the concept of service and the sincerity for to do something for Bhagwan was always sort of it had already sort of had come into your system. So that is very, very beautiful. So finally, your name is there. You became a student, and so till now, you had worshipped Swami at your home. You have seen pictures and perhaps heard stories about Swami from parents and Balika's gurus, and now when you actually saw Swami, actually, you know, the chance to look at him at close quarters, how was that experience when you became a student?
It was really amazing, because as after seeing the list, we went the next day to Vrindavan, and after getting admitted there, we went to the Kalyan Mandapam. We were sitting outside in Kalyan Mandapam. About 35 of us were there from Andhra Pradesh, and all of us had gone to Vrindavan campus.
Mm-hmm.
So we were sitting outside in Kalyan Mandapam. As you rightly said, evening Swami came. It was really the most memorable kind of experience. First time seeing Swami physically, and it was really a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in Vrindavan, the most important thing is like tri sessions. So that was really most memorable part.
Mm.
And during the first few days, we were allowed to sit in the beginning in the
Generally, the freshers are allowed to sit in the front.
Yeah,
and so that you whatever chance that Bhagwan gives to the students as the newcomers, you should benefit from it.
Yeah. So we had a very nice opportunity, and we could sit in the front and see various things, like what Swami teaches in various ways.
Correct.
Through his discourse, or through his small materializations, or various things which Swami does. A small discussion, transformation.
Yes.
So I just remember one instance in this
three impression sessions in Vrindavan.
Yeah. I remember in one three session, as a routine practice, we take like offering to Swami. I should not say routine practice.
Mm.
It is our offering to Swami that we take, one of the brothers takes a rose, one takes a bowl of groundnuts,
yes,
and another brother takes cloves and all this. So on a rotation basis, we all get the opportunity to do this seva, or opportunity to be close to Swami so that he will receive and bless us. And in that particular day, this brother who had taken the groundnuts was sitting next to Swami's jhula, and Swami was discussing with the front boys, and then he picked up a few groundnuts in his hand,
mm-hmm.
and he asked the brother who is sitting right in the front to stretch his palm.
Mm-hmm.
So when that brother stretched his palm, Swami gently dropped the groundnuts kind of into his hand.
Mm-hmm.
But we were all amazed to see that when what was coming into his hand was not groundnuts, actually. It is a nice, beautiful garland made of jasmine flowers. Very fragrant.
Oh,
very beautiful.
The groundnuts had turned into jasmine.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, when we are just young that time and want to see something which is, Swami also shows a thing for that, just to see the...
How exciting it is to be with Swami.
Yeah.
You know, you get that kind of a feeling.
Yeah. So that was nice thing to see at the time, and nice experience. And again, Swami, after some time playing around with that garland, he told to give it back, and he took it. And then again, I think he just blew on it or something and put it back in the bowl of groundnuts. And then when he was putting back, groundnuts came back.
Oh, it is back to groundnuts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That is like, this is a small incident kind of compared to the magnanimity of the Lord.
That's what, and that is what God is, isn't it? Generation, organization, dissolution, everything is in his
hand. So he showed that everything is in his hand.
Yes.
Like always Swami says, everything is in my hand. He shows his hand and says that.
Yeah.
So that was one instance which I very nicely remember out of the many other.
Mm.
So that was one thing.
Wow. In fact, you know, brother, when I look at your life, it almost seems like that, because, you know, we come to Bhagwan as nuts and then he creates flowers out of us.
Yes.
You know, you got the chance to study and you got the gold medal from his hand, and you know, now you are so happy. Just like a flower, you know, so happy to be at the feet of the Lord, you know, to be used to adorn the Lord. I mean, that is what your life also has been. So let's continue with how fragrant your life became since then.
Yeah. After joining the Vrindavan campus, initially it was a very beautiful experience for me, because it's a very nice schedule we have. And packed with, a fully packed schedule with, especially with, we have nice bhajans and we have Vedam. So there I got connected, like, when I was inclined and somehow developed interest towards Vedam,
mm-hmm.
and wanted that somehow to learn it somehow. Because that's the only opportunity, I think, which students who study regular BSc, MSc courses, only in our institute, maybe the students get an opportunity to learn Vedam.
Correct, yeah. So I don't know if it happens in any other...
Guys who take the regular programs.
Exactly.
There may be some specific programs of Vedam, etc. Maybe.
I mean, people who study in Vedic schools is a different thing.
Different thing.
People studying the normal
regular
courses
yes.
and getting the chance to...
Yeah. I think it's unique only in this place.
Yes.
So that has really made me excited, and then I joined one of the Vedam groups, and we were learning some initial Grahanamtva, all the initial stuff. And after a month or so, in towards September, we learned, we got a very important message from Swami, that the super specialty hospital inauguration will be on the November 22nd, and all students should be chanting Rudram for the inauguration of the hospital.
Oh, wow.
That was really amazing message for us, because, and especially the Vedam team was really excited. The guys, of course, the senior brothers were more excited. And for us, it was very exciting. Why I would say, because we get an opportunity to chant in front of Swami, in Bhagavan's presence. We are able to chant Vedam for the first time. So that was really the main thing.
Lot of push to learn Vedam.
Yeah.
I mean, and there cannot be a greater motivation.
Yeah. And maximum students were there in the Vedam. And one sentence I remember, which our teacher that time was Dr. Ravikumar, who is current warden of Vrindavan campus.
Yes.
So the first class he took of the Vedam, he told us that there should not be Dvitiya Vignam for that.
Uh-huh.
That is a very important concept in Vedam. When somebody initiates Vedam learning, suppose we initiate today at a particular time, and we think that if we are going to do it tomorrow at that time, we have to attend it. We should not miss in any cause. That's what Swami has instructed to the
So when you start a particular activity, continue the next day.
Yes. Continue the next day, or suppose by chance next week if you have to do, like in some Sai centers or somewhere. So it should be done, like kind of, we should not miss.
Should not miss the successive endeavor to learn it or to go on in that path.
Yes.
Yes.
So that is very important. I wanted to just, just remembered that.
When you look at it, symbolically, when you start a good work, persist with it.
Yes, you rightly said.
Yeah. Don't lose steam.
Exactly.
And especially when you do sacred tasks like this, you know, learning Vedam and really associated with the divine and with spirituality, I think it's even more important that you don't lose the enthusiasm initially.
Yes, exactly. Because when you're going the right path, maybe that's what is underlining statement.
Yeah, it might be difficult, but you make it a determination that, you know, once you decide that I will do this, okay, you decide that I will chant Vedam, you decide that I will study good literature, you decide that I will do this seva. So continue it. So don't miss the next instant.
Exactly. Yeah. So then it goes on. That's very true. I think that was the reason behind the statement being given by the scholars and elders.
Yeah, possibly. We never know. Yes.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we all started learning Rudram. And it went on for a month or so. And then after that, we all came to Prashanthalayam in the first week of November. And then along with, we used to have daily Rudram practice, the both Prashanthalayam campus and Vrindavan campus, all brothers in different formations, just to see that all of our voices are synchronized and we get the best output kind of.
Mm.
So that was being everyday practice. And after that, Swami had given us very beautiful opportunity to be in our own small way, to participate in the construction or in the project of the super specialty hospital, which is a magnanimous project at that moment.
Yes. So you actually were part of the construction process of the hospital, 1991.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, we were part of the construction, kind of helping. Swami had instructed all the boys, majority of them, should help in transporting the bricks. That was one of the activities which Swami had given. They were all bricks placed at one particular place. So wherever it is required for construction, or else you take it into a particular designated place. So just movement of the bricks was one of the important things, because they were placed in the front of the hospital where the lawn was supposed to come.
Okay, so it cleared the area.
Yeah, that is one of the major activities. So I remember brothers really worked hard, and even their hands were cut. Now nobody used to bother. Like they used to throw cement bricks in the formation of human chain. And you could imagine that there would be some small bruises. But all for love of Swami.
Yes.
This is all
great joy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great joy. So this was going on every day for about a couple of weeks. It was there. And the best part was that every day afternoon at 1:30 or so after lunch, Swami comes for the portico darshan on top. So that time Swami would ask how much work is done, how many things are done, and he would say, okay, you have to push more faster, there's not much time. But having Swami's darshan, that was the most memorable thing.
When Swami inquiring about the work, Swami being so involved in the work, and I'm sure Swami must be also sending a lot of fruits and gifts.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Exactly. Fruits, sweets. Every day we were happily having it. And towards the end, almost day and night, even sometimes some of us had to miss darshan also, just to ensure that Swami told you, finish the work. That is more important for us. So like that towards beds and many other brothers worked in different areas also of the when the hospital was coming up. But it's really like the squirrels who were there, who was taking small part of sand when Rama built the bridge.
Yes.
Like that it was for us who could small way try to do something. Though it is not a big thing, but
it's a great joy to be actually part of the project. And when you look back, you know, you feel so filled with gratitude that, you know, you were able to be part of the
and offer others in some way.
Yes. Wow, wonderful. And Vedam, the chance of learning Vedam and chanting Vedam is what gave that amazing opportunity of chanting Vedam when the hospital started.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
And as you mentioned, this is really significant where Swami said that I want all the boys to chant Rudram when the hospital started, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
Just, I remember now when you said that, towards, I think it was November 15th or so, Swami called all the boys and gave dhotis individually all the boys who are going to chant Vedam.
Wow.
On red the dhotis. 22nd. Red dhotis Swami had given. Mm. And Swami asked, are you chanting Vedam? Then he used to give. Very clearly I remember. And then we were all dressed up nicely on 22nd morning and went to the hospital.
Wow.
It was really the one of the greatest moments that time. Standing around the Krishna statue, the garden which is there.
Yes, yes.
And chanting Rudram full throated as much as we could. So, but this is a small thing in front of the Ishvara himself. But it was really a great thing for us.
When body, mind and soul were at that point in time completely in involvement in serving Swami, like you came 2-3 weeks before and you know the body was completely tired, happily tired, working for the hospital, and now your soul was elevated on the day chanting Rudram in front of Bhagwan. Wow.
That was
the Prime Minister came. You remember that occasion, the Prime Minister?
The Prime Minister, Sri P.V. Narasimha Garu, had come.
Yes.
And it was a great moment actually. Swami was, I think around 9 o'clock itself, Swami was there waiting, and then the Prime Minister had come.
Wow.
It was really a great moment.
So from then on, this Vedam chanting has always remained with you, isn't it?
Yeah. Then onwards, exactly after this episode of getting the chance to chant in front of Swami, that really gave us more like excitement. Like we have to learn more and more Vedam. And
man, this is the first year, right? And you got such a major thrust. Such a beautiful chance. So I think, you know, after that it just remains, right? I have to keep chanting. You don't know what other chance Vedam will give me.
As you rightly said, so we were in the Vedam group and learned different suktams and stotrams. And then whenever Swami came to Vrindavan for any festival or during summer course, we used to get really good opportunity because there will be 5-6 Vedam boys and surely you will get a Pad Namaskar, you can chant in front of Swami.
Yes.
So they were really exciting thoughts. So it made us push and learn more Vedam.
I remember, I mean, when you're looking for what are the ways that you can get Swami's physical proximity, you know, bhajans and being in music group is one.
Yes.
Being in Vedam is another very precious opportunity because you get to stand next to Swami in those days in front of, in the beginning of every festival, any occasion, there would be 5 or 6 boys who would chant Vedam standing just beside Swami, and then you can actually take Pad Namaskaram, right? I think I remember that was the major
driving force
to learn Vedam. And in your entire year also, if you get even one chance, you know, you feel the whole year was worth it for learning Vedam.
That's true. Because, and actually, in fact, we could get more chances
more
because
chances.
When Swami was in Vrindavan, different groups wise we used to organize, like why each group goes and gets opportunity. And during summer course, it's like almost like 10-12 days.
Yes.
So surely, at least once or twice, we get chance there also.
Wow.
So it's really a great thing. And as in the beginning, I said, this is the only place possibly where we learn Vedam. In this type of education.
Mm. Even as you do your chemistry and physics, you also learn Mantra Pushpam and Anandavali.
Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful.
And then continuing forward, as I told you, then the interest for Vedam continued, and towards even later after I passed out from the institute also, I was keen that I should be trying to chant Vedam every day. And in this process, actually, we got padukas made for doing daily puja so that we can chant also Vedam in the process. So if some driving force is there, it will make me chant, kind of get some schedule working around it.
Mm.
So in this context, we got padukas made and came for Swami's blessings. And that was on the New Year's time.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get them blessed a couple of times, but somehow it didn't happen.
Mm.
And then we also saw that the padukas maybe were, we have to little bit modify them, kind of in my family we felt, and we mm-hmm. just made a new set of padukas.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the year, in August, September, I was coming
in,
here.
In
it was around 2009,
okay.
I think.
Okay. Mm.
So then in August, September time, every weekend I was here for 2, 3, or 4 weekends, I would believe.
Oh.
Mm. And trying to get the padukas blessed. And one thing was there, once it happened that Swami came really close to me, but he was talking to the brother next to me, so I did not want to thrust the padukas onto that. So I sat and I kept quiet. So
waited for Swami
I waited
to bless.
For the right moment and Swami's blessing to be there completely on that. So again, next week I had come, but I had learned that Swami was not coming for evening darshan
so
few days during that time. But I said, Swami, my prayer, whatever, if you will, please bless me and bless the padukas.
Mm.
And I was really elated that Swami Darshan music started playing, and it was very, I was really enthused. Yeah, now maybe the opportunity for me. So when Swami came, and you know the old students blog, no, he turns from the devotee side.
Correct.
His glance was directly on padukas and on me.
Oh.
And that smile I'll never forget.
Wow.
That he has come only to bless the padukas. That I like that feeling he gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he blessed the padukas. And from there onwards, every day, small worship we do.
Wow.
And I chant namakam, chamakam and all this as a daily kind of a habit or a routine in my life.
Wow. I mean, so the initial paduka blessing was not happening for some reason, but maybe Swami wanted those modifications to happen.
Exactly.
We never know.
Yes.
Yes. And at the right moment. And now this is so clear. Like you wanted, you know, a very clear moment of acknowledgement of your prayer from Bhagwan. And this was so clear, right? He looked directly at you and you really felt that he's come that day for me.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That was really joyful to see that. And next day, of course, I gave a thanks letter to Swami. And another thing I thought at that moment was, because Swami has blessed the padukas, he should also give me opportunity to daily do prayer.
Yes.
As far as possible. So that's how this routine of mine.
So you became even more serious.
Serious about it. Yeah,
now that Swami has blessed the Paduka, I have to do the regular worship to it.
Yeah, of that.
Wow.
And so that's how I continue my routine. And here I would like to mention another point regarding to Vedam again. Once it's actually in a dream it happened.
Uh-huh.
It is about 3 years back. And in my dream, I'm sitting in Portugal in Prashant Nilayam. And chanting Rudram.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when I was a student, I was sitting in Portugal, but there was no Vedam chanting officially at that time. Like, you know that.
Yes.
So, but in this dream, I'm sitting in Portugal in Prashant Nilayam. It means inside that palace where Swami used to come to us. And chanting Rudram. So, Swami in Darshan came. I was in the path, so Swami came there. And he's asking, Em Cheptunavu, Swami said.
Oh, what are you chanting?
What are you chanting? That's what it means.
Mm.
So Swami said, and I said, Swami, Rudram Cheptunano. Means I am chanting Rudram, Swami. Then Swami paused a moment and say, Arunam Cheppu, Swami said.
Oh.
Means Swami told, you chant Arunam. That's what it means. So this is a dream.
Very clear.
Very clear dream. Mm. And we may forget some dream, but this is very clear. I remember even to this day.
Mm.
And of course, it was in my memory. I kept it aside. And after a few months, we had some discussion about it. Then I told that Swami came in my dream and told that I should chant Arunam.
Mm.
And that time, my wife was also mentioning to me and actually reminding me that about during that time, we got some medical tests done. And then I found that some vitamin D level was low.
Uh-huh.
So maybe Swami was giving a hint that in this way, you chant Arunam and it will be taken care of.
Because Arunam is sun worship.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, I think that was the way Swami takes care of us to a minutest detail, I believe.
Oh, wow.
That is really one of the amazing experiences.
I mean, generally,
of
Swami would ask, you know, to chant Rudram. You know, here, very specifically, I'm also hearing for the first time where Swami clearly told you to chant Arunam. And now, you need a lot of vitamin D. You need a lot of the divine energy of the sun to come into you, and perhaps Arunam will do that for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So from that time onwards, I slowly initiated it and practicing to learn Arunam as well and chant a little bit of it.
Wow.
But it's really a great thing. It gives a lot of energy, a lot of joy when we chant these mantras and Vedam, especially when I'm a little more relaxed. On a routine office day, a little bit of hush and hustle, but on a holiday, it's really...
You chant it with with as much joy and with
really,
as much time you can give it.
Exactly.
Wow.
That really gives a great pleasure.
Sort of it sort of wakes you up in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that is your great start to the morning, to chant the Vedam.
And that keeps the day going strong. And because we once we go to office, kind of I was mentioning, just in the current company which I work, that's GMK Research.
Yes.
They are also quite, G stands for Ganesha.
Mm-hmm.
So they are more, they are like also kind of, they are good towards like spiritual practices, kind of things. And
Oriented towards Indian cultures.
Exactly. So we have pujas in our office for different festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And especially during the yearly celebrations, annual day celebration, they make it a point that it has to start with Vedam chanting, and they tell me that please take up the activity.
Oh. So you chant now Vedam in the office.
I think that is also a great thing.
Wow.
What Swami has taught us to tell the world, because in office there are different sort of people who some of them might not have heard to Vedam, but at least they will hear it.
Wow.
And this positive vibrations will really change the thing. So in that way it is very, very good. I am very grateful for this opportunity of getting to learn Vedam in our institute.
I mean, what you did as a student, now even as a professional, you're able to do it in the office.
Yes.
Wow. So they know that you are from Satya Sai University?
Yes. They know I am from Satya Sai University. They have a great respect and adoration for our students, because we all follow Swami's guidelines, is what Swami has instructed, and try to be as close to that as possible. So really they appreciate that. They really think that very good people come out of here. They have really high regard for our institute. They keep telling me sometimes, why don't you see if some guys are there from your institute, bring them in.
Oh, wow. In fact, it reminds me of a devotee's company in Delhi. In that company, every morning all the employees come together and they stop everything. They first chant Gayatri Mantra and a few mantrams, and only then, you know, everyone goes back to their places and starts their work. You know, it sort of sets the tone on a very sublime note in the morning. So it's really beautiful that, you know, Swami has placed you in a company where you can very subtly take Swami's teachings into the atmosphere, into the ambience. Beautiful. So it's been a very exciting journey being part of Vedam, isn't it?
Yes. Really.
Amazing. So, brother, talk about your other activities in the hostel, because, you know, when you are in the hostel, Vedam is one activity that you get involved, but just being in the hostel also gives you many other chances to be engaged in various self-reliance activities. Like you have in the hostel, somebody looks after stores, somebody looks after the maintenance, somebody else looks after the dietary kitchen, somebody else works to help in the garden. So were you involved in any such activity, and what memories you have of that training in the hostel?
Yeah, when you say this, I recollect a couple of things actually. I was involved in partly in the kitchen section and also in the gardening in Brindavan campus initially. So I think I have some beautiful experience also I remember out of this, which I narrate now. Actually, when we were involved in the gardening in Brindavan, you remember the quadrangle which is there?
Yes.
So Subramanian sir used to take care of it, and under his guidance we used to try to do our bit in order to maintain it. And there were some in my colleagues in my class, a few, three, four other brothers who were more involved in that. They should do on a really vigorous and religious manner, I would say, the gardening. Out of their interest for the flowers and plants and the work. And so this is we were doing this work in Brindavan, and after our bachelor's, we all of us moved to Prashanthilayam campus, and once we joined the hostel, we were just going around and we noticed that just adjacent to our hostel, there was a bit of a barren land, which is not so properly kept. And then especially these brothers, these four or five guys who were the core team of the gardening, they were, they saw that, why don't we clear up this land and we'll see like how do we move forward on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we took permission from Dr. Shivashankar Sai sir, who was a warden that time. And then the work initiated of clearing up the area.
Mm-hmm.
So religiously they used to do every morning and evening. Whenever time is available, the work is only to clean up the garden area.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In that manner they started off. And we also used to pitch in once in a while to help them. And for the whole thing was cleared, and when the land was ready, then the idea came up, why don't we make a beautiful garden here?
Mm-hmm.
And then the designing was done, how, what should be there, what type of plant should be there, and with the help of other brothers and teachers who all pitched in, so beautiful design was prepared, and then really work started on it.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few months, the whole area was transformed into a very beautiful garden.
Hmm. Wow.
And very nice to see. One could we could go.
I mean, what was just a junkyard was now a lovely picture of flowers.
Exactly. It is a beautiful garden which is coming up.
Hmm.
And during this time, then we got the idea that okay, now we have made some garden, or we have to pray to Swami that Swami should come and inaugurate it and bless it.
Hmm.
So that was the next thought. So that was towards second year of my MSc, 95-96 time.
Hmm.
So we made a card. The garden was we planned to name Sai Prerna.
Oh wow!
Because
Sai
the
Prerna.
Thought and the
Prerna is inspiration.
Inspiration comes
so inspired
from
inspired by Sai.
Exactly.
Hmm.
The inspiration came from Swami. So like that it was. So we went for, went and prayed to Swami to visit and bless the garden. And Swami looked and blessed the garden. He said, "Alage, I will come," like that he said, but he didn't specify exactly. So after a few days or a week or so, then one day morning, Swami said, "Okay, now I'm coming to the garden."
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember in the white Benz he came that day.
Oh.
And then he came, he walked all the way because we had placed stones nicely, so Swami will walk on that. And there was a nice jhula kept in the middle of the garden, beautifully decorated. So Swami came in, sat on the jhula and talked to the garden, whoever had made the garden. Swami
the
talked
brothers.
To them. Those brothers, we were also nearby only, but the four guys were did majority of the work. So Swami talked to them, blessed them. Swami took coconut water and spent some 5-10 minutes, and then Swami had retired. So that was really a great moment to cherish, because as a small activity of gardening, which is like a self-reliance activity which we learned in our bachelor's time, had really helped. And we could do something again in a small way to make a little beautiful place or beautiful garden, so Swami could come and bless it.
Wow. I mean that whole sincerity of service, you know, I mean, that is something, you know, which was always there in you, and now you are in an environment where you see that happen, like in front of you. It's really very inspiring for one reason. And, you know, you learned something in Vrindavan. The boys got to do this little thing in Vrindavan. But once they came to Prashanti, I mean, they thought, now let's make something big. Let's like create a new garden, completely change the landscape of the place. And wow, and the way you were able to even pull Bhagwan into it.
That is a great.
That is the power of sincerity, isn't it? Wow.
That was a really amazing experience once again. Because, as you said, the barren land could be converted to a beautiful garden. So
wow.
It was really a great moment.
I mean, I think these are those moments when you actually live with the avatar. You know, you can see your sincerity being rewarded in person.
Yeah.
You can see the fulfillment of a prayer happening right in front of you in the most beautiful manner that it can happen. Wow. So, brother, when it was time for you to leave the institute, must have been very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it was quite tough because we have spent a very beautiful time with Swami and would long to be with Swami forever. So it was a little tough at the time. I tried to be around, but I had to move out. And then, just before that, I wanted to say, after our MSc completed on the 31st of March, we went for a short break and came back for summer course. But then we learned that already the students who have completed their MSc, we would have to maybe wait. Swami will call them for giving the badges for the
People who have finished their education, whether they can still attend the summer course is always a question mark. It depends on if Swami is gracious to give them also.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So we were also in the dilemma, and Dr. Shivshankar Sai sir told that you guys wait, let us see if Swami calls you instead, we will give a signal, you can come into the Tri Vrindavan, else you please be around. So we were all waiting near the elephant area of the hostel, and Swami is there. Swami came, he's distributing card, we are waiting, and of course Swami retired, and then we were thinking, okay, we'll see, because we are waiting for instruction from the mandir or from these people. Then Dr. Shivshankar Sai sir came and told that, okay, Swami has permitted the boys who have completed, and there was, I think some 15-20 were there. Swami has given badges to you people,
okay.
So you can do it.
Wow.
So like that. Actually, another thing was that on the same time at the on the same day in the afternoon when Swami is giving badges, I happened to have an interview at Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore, for a PhD.
Okay.
Entrance interview. So then, of course, I thought, okay, Swami is giving badges. This is more important. Afterwards, we'll think about that.
Oh, so you didn't go for the interview.
So I didn't go for interview. I was stayed back and praying to Swami. And when sir was giving badges, after that, one of my friends was also mentioning, this guy had some interview, but he missed, he didn't go today, kind of thing. But
it appeared that maybe you missed that chance when you have already finished your education, and if you're getting a chance to do your PhD in ISC, the premier institute in India when it comes to research and sciences.
Yeah.
I mean, from a worldly point of view, it seemed like you've done a foolish thing. But you are very clear, right? I mean, the summer course badge
that is
more important than going to ISC.
Yeah. Exactly. As you said, at that moment, I felt that was more important, because somehow I thought if whatever opportunity Swami can give, we can try to serve him. So in that, so we stayed back for summer course, and that was the one of the experience. And then later on in my years, it did happen that I went out and then I joined for PhD in Hyderabad, that is Hyderabad Central University. And then after joining, after 6-8 months, my professor tells me that all of us have to go to Bangalore, because he moved as a director of IISc Bangalore. And then see, that's how Swami created that I could move to IISc Bangalore and graduate with a PhD degree from IISc Bangalore.
Oh wow. So now you went to IISc on invitation. Your professor moved and he said, you come along.
See, that's really a great thing, because as you said, if you correlate things, that time somehow my mind said, okay, you stay back.
Yes.
And you listen to this and be here, accept what Swami gives. And then Swami will ensure that he will give much more than what you're asking for. That's what happened in this instance, kind of.
Wow. I mean, they say, choose the kingdom of God and everything else shall be added on to you. And at that time, you chose to get summer course badge. You chose to be with Swami. Swami said, okay, if you made the right choice, then everything else, I will give it to you. Wow. So, I mean, generally people write entrances to get into IISc, but here you just had to move in because your professor moved in.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, and Swami made it like that.
Wow.
So that is really, again, offer myself my gratitude to Swami for that.
Wow, like, wonderful.
Allowing me to do the PhD there.
So after your PhD there, you moved to the US.
Yeah, after my PhD, I moved to US, and that also again is an amazing experience, because there were several places which I applied, and the particular place where I was got invitation from was North Carolina State University. That is in Raleigh. And as usual, I went along with my family. So my wife and my daughter was less than 1 year old at the time.
Okay.
So my wife was a little worried that whether the place where we go, whether we will have Swami's Sai Center or not, whether we'll have Swami's circle or not. She wasn't sure.
She longed to be in a devotee circle.
Exactly. She always wanted to be here, but my daughter is too young, so I have to take everybody. So I had no option. Then I said, let us pray to Swami, and whatever he wills will happen. And then it was really amazing to see it when I just went and typed in the web, Google, that such Sai Center Raleigh. I found that there is a huge center there, right, which is run by mostly by Indians also.
Wow.
It was really pleasing to see that. And then once we land in the place in US, the next week itself, the in charge, the president of the organization comes, and he picks us up in his own car, takes us for lunch and for bhajans. And at that moment, I realized really what is the value, or what is how people look at Swami students, and how we have to conduct ourselves also. It really,
because someone coming and such a warm welcome in a foreign land, only because you are a Sai student.
Exactly. That is the only thing. Only because we are associated with Swami and Swami student, they are somebody who is the president of organization. He did not come. He can just send someone, for example. But he comes on his own. And from then onwards, I would say, brother, every week, invariably, somebody or other came, and we were, whole year we attended to the bhajans or any evening gathering, anything. We were never missed out.
Wow.
And that is because of, again, I come back to that. Two things. One is that Vedam, again, was very critical.
Okay.
Because after the first month, there was the committee over there decided that we will have full-scale Vedam chanting. So 1 hour Vedam practice, I would say. So 1 hour in a month, in a one Sunday, was dedicated for Vedam tutorial.
Learning.
So then like that it started. And I had the opportunity for about 6-8 months. I could teach them Ganapati Adara Shirsham and Durga Suktam. These things I could teach to them. So that is one part. And a little bit was related to bhajans.
Mm-hmm.
It happened that they did not have somebody who could play tabla.
Okay.
But though I won't say I know tabla, but a little bit, one or two things which I know, Swami made sure a little bit this fellow learns here so that it is useful at that juncture. Like, that's
wow.
how it is.
Hmm.
And then, because of that, they used to take me to bhajans.
Oh, so you used to play tabla.
Joyed some just basic beat, you know, just to keep them happy.
Hmm.
But
wow.
that's how it is. Like, we are getting opportunity.
So it is this playing tabla and chanting Vedam, which came to your
rescue
in a foreign land. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, you are all the time, for every session they came and they picked you up
exactly.
from your home and took you to the centers because you were teaching Vedam.
Yes.
Wow.
Because you know that outside, abroad, you have to have your own vehicle.
That is the value of, you know, Sathya Sai University. You know, is almost, I'm just saying, you know, someone in any other university, what is the benefit of learning Vedam? Here is the most, if you look at it in the most mundane yeah. way also, I mean, just see how Swami exactly. connects the dots
yeah.
and how Vedam will help in the most mundane physical way to the
exactly.
Supernatural metaphysical way. I mean, everything that you learn at Bhagwan's University, you don't know how they will come to your rescue when
exactly.
and how fantastically they can, you know, make beautiful things happen in your life. Wow.
That is really a great...
So you never really... So your wife's apprehensions melted away?
Actually, I'm very thankful to Swami for that. Actually, he placed us at that rally, the place, and it was really good. Because my wife, as I said in the beginning, she was a little apprehensive, but all the things were satisfied, and she was very happy that we could come to a very nice place. And then after an year or so, because we were longing to come back to India and have more Swami's close darshan, we decided that we come back to India, and then I joined in the different companies and I was working.
So finally then you joined GMK Research, yeah. Brother, so how it has been working in these companies and trying to follow Swami's teachings? I mean, there are lots of things that you learn when you are a student. Can I ask you, what are the things that you never compromise on in your professional life, in your social life? It's something that you say, it's a no, it's an absolute no, and come what may, this is what you stand for.
Yeah, I think 100% dedication towards work is one thing, which I also tell my always my colleagues and the team members who work with me, whatever work you are doing, you do with total dedication, do in a proper way, because that's what even in the corporate world they would expect.
Yes.
But that, because we are already in the system, we got training much more easily, I would say.
Yes.
So it really helps a lot, because we can be more focused without getting distracted. So that really
helps. In the corporate
helps.
World, they would do it for the boss, but here you do it because you're doing it for Swami.
Yes, exactly. And coming back to it, here also every day, Swami, there are instances where Swami keeps always guiding us, because he's our guide. And I have a couple of things to mention over here. When I joined this recent company, GMK Research, in 2014, actually this company is run by my PhD colleague or the senior.
Mm-hmm.
So that it is like kind of, we have some, we work together for so many years like that. So I joined with them, and for all these years, prior to that, I have been working in the area of organic synthesis, and then my expertise is in that. So, but here my friend tells me that, okay, this is good, but you also have to take up some additional responsibility of analytical research and development area, which we are trying to build up.
Mm-hmm.
That was new to me relatively. Then I prayed to Swami, Swami, this is some new thing to me, so you only have to guide me through that, so that I can get easily transition or kind of get into it easily. And really Swami helped me for that, to get into this smoothly from my earlier expertise area into a newer one. Especially in the, when I'm working, at this, because I have not gone through a training differently for that. On job training kind of, I also have to get, and I have to ensure that my team members also trained accordingly. So I should ensure that I know the things so that I can tell them.
Correct. Yeah.
So in that way Swami helped a lot actually. And in this one instance I remember very much. One particular project was there, we have to deliver, and our timelines were getting away, and of course the management is not so happy because we have to deliver it at any cost, and we are trying our best, but it's not working. So again our only refuge is Swami. So again pray to Swami, somehow please guide us through this. And that particular day after prayer, when I'm going to office, when I'm driving, particular Swami gave a particular thought. Why don't you try like this particular composition of the chemicals and this thing and see. That's what is the instruction.
Then just a moment of flash.
Moment, Swami's guidance kind of like. So then after that thought, I went to office and I told this guys, okay, this is, you just please do like this. Then when they do, it was just coming out. So when critical time, Swami is always there. Like that's what I believe and see. Because also our area of work is little tricky kind of. We work in areas where not many people in the world work on that specific areas of synthesis of the compound. So that because they're more critical and more kind of difficult to handle, always I pray to Swami to guide and be there always to ensure that we are able to do our work because we are being paid and we have to deliver that to the satisfaction.
Wow. So every day, you see how Bhagwan sort of is untying all the naughty situations.
Exactly.
At your workplace.
Yeah.
Wow. And, given that they know you are from the Satya Sai University, it'll also be perhaps feel, very, relatively easy for you to manage people. Is that so? Because generally I have seen that, you know, living in the hostel where you live with like 13, 14 boys, especially Sai students find it easier to lead a team or to work with people. How has it been for you?
I agree with you completely. Because in our hostel, as you said, we live with different brothers who are from different regions or different languages and learn different things from them. Because everybody has a lot of positives.
Yes.
So, and also in when we are room leaders in third year, for example, we try to manage the all the first year guys so that they're disciplined, they maintain all the decorum. So, certainly this helps in our workplace as well. Because we could, of course, with our own experience, we can show them as well.
Yes.
We can lead by example kind of thing. If suppose we say some particular thing has to be done this way, we as us lead in that way and show them.
Yeah.
That
so
is
like a manager, you first do.
Yeah, exactly. I try to do like that. That's my way of doing kind of.
Yes.
So I show them, this is what we have to do. And I also try to do as much as I can.
Live by example.
Yeah, so that they also try to follow as much as they would. And certainly this, the training and all the teachings of Swami and the hostel environment has really helped a great lot for me in the professional world.
Wow. And you continue to feel his presence.
Yeah, surely, exactly. Because always Swami keeps the tough targets so that we don't miss touching, falling at his feet. We don't miss the thought of that.
Wow. I mean, the morning Vedam sort of energizes you and then his love powers you through the day. Wow.
Exactly.
Beautiful. I don't know if you thought that we would be doing this conversation, but you know, to me, this is also again another way Swami always surprises us.
Exactly, you're right.
And the studio is so busy, but still, the very fact that we could do this conversation is again, perhaps it is His will and His design. Thank you so much, brother, for coming and sparing your time. I know you've been so busy helping your wife with the Telugu stream, but this is divine grace. And when people ask you about Swami in your company, or someone who does not know anything about Swami, what do you say to them? Who is Sai Baba according to you?
According to me, Sai Baba or Swami is the whole, he's the master of the universe. He has everything and everything goes according to His will and His plan. And so we should always keep that in mind and do whatever we are doing. Like,
wow. So all our endeavor should be just to align our will to that omni will that He is.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, brother, for coming to the studios and for this lovely episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Swami has left such lasting impressions, divine impressions in all our lives, and He has blessed you with a lovely family too, which is so dedicated to Swami. Let's pray that this connect with Him becomes stronger and stronger so that one day we just feel only Him in whatever we do, wherever we are, however we are. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam,
dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed that interview, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, with Dr. Lakshminath Sripada. He was in conversation with Bishop Prushti from Radio Sai. We look forward to your feedback to this interview and all Radio Sai offerings. You can always reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. The current time in Prashanthi Nilayam is 41 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and today is the 8th of November 2018. Thank you for your company on Morning Glory Thursday Live. Now, earlier on the show, I asked a question, and what an amazing response I've got, and quite a bit of debate, because I asked the question, in which year did the tradition of the Akhand Bhajan begin? I have a number of varying answers, and I'm not going to give you and say, okay, this is the final answer, because what I decided is that I'm going to read out your answers and your names and then play a small audio clip by Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, who explains the origin. So you be the jury is still out there. So till you hear this clip, let's just go with the answers I have received and I want to read out. One of the first replies I got was from Singapore, from Brother Ravi Ranganathan, who had to refer to Google. And according to him, it is 1946, began in Bangalore. Bindu Dinesh of Chennai said 1946. Mrs. T.R. Rajeshwari from Chennai, she's my colleague at Vidyavahini, she wrote very emphatically, she wrote 13th November 1976. I want to give her the benefit of doubt and think that she actually had a typo. Maybe she wanted to write 1946. And so T.R. Rajeshwari's answer on the email says 1976, 13 November. I could even just sort of presume maybe she meant 46. Then there is Manohar Y. Sheshaya from Chennai, Tamil Nadu, who said February 1946. Archana T.S. from Tumkur in Karnataka, 1945. Shri Gopinath Rukmangathan from Chennai, Tamil Nadu says February 1946. Pratap Makodia from Bhavnagar, Gujarat, 1946. Mrudula Murthy from Bangalore, Karnataka, 1945. Babita Mehtani from Hong Kong says 1946, it started in Bangalore. Ajay Rajan from Chennai says February 1946. Rekha Loknath from Mysore, Karnataka says 1946, it began in Bangalore. She was fortunate to have attended a few times in those days when Swami was present in devotees' houses when it began. How lucky you are, Rekha Loknath. Brother Yogakumaran Nadaraja from Toronto Region 2 from the Lansdowne Sai Seva Center of Ontario says 1946. Geeta Rani Gurung from Kathmandu, Nepal says Akhand Bhajan began in 1946 and in 1971 it converted to Global Akhand Bhajan. So much detail, amazing. Darini Narayanan from Coimbatore, Tamil Nadu says 1946, it started in Bangalore. Regina Pillai from South Africa says, again, started in Bangalore in 46. Uma Anil Kumar from Dubai, UAE says, 1946, Bangalore. Lata Sairam of Chennai says, 1946. And Lata, by the way, thank you for those lovely Diwali greetings. And finally, today's answer belongs to Dr. Vishalakshi of Chennai. Dr. Vishalakshi says, the first Akhand Bhajan, I mean, I'm hoping this one is the correct answer, but still, November 1945 by the family of Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram in Bangalore and Swami personally attended. Now with that, I will just leave you to decide what should be the correct answer, 46, 76 or 45. And everybody said Bangalore. Some people said February, some said November. So let's hear it directly from the source because, as you know, Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram is the daughter of Dr. Padmanabhan, the dentist, and it was her grandfather who started, who was a priest of the mandir for many years. He started the tradition of Akhand Bhajan. And what is the history? How did it come about? What was the context? Brother Raghu was kind enough to find me an audio clip, which I just found, and I will play it for you. And this audio clip where the origin of Akhand Bhajan is well explained is a short one. It will be followed by the rest of Mr. Ryuko Hira's interview and that will go on till 11:30. I do not think that interview will conclude today because we are so out of time. So if there is a portion left, you can always go to our series Tryst with Divinity and a key in his name and you can listen to the last part there. But most part of it we will play today and at 11:30 my colleague Brother Bishop Prushti will log in. Thank you so much for your company, and do not skip, please do not skip the explanation about the origin of the Akhand Bhajan that Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram is going to share with us in this very interesting and humorous clip that we have found for you. You're going to love it. That's my promise to you. Have a Sai Sam awesome day ahead, dear sisters and brothers. And from all of us at Team Radio Sai, wishing you a phenomenal, rocking, enjoyable, energetic Akhand Bhajan weekend. Thank you for your company, and please enjoy the rest of the show, and we'll be waiting for your feedback at listener@radiosai.org. Sai Ram.
When they went there and they saw him and they believed him, they said, we want to keep the strength of having seen such a wonderful being in our lives when we go back to Bangalore from Puttaparthi. So when they first started going to Puttaparthi and they started to sing those long songs in front of Swami, and Swami used to join in with them, they came back to Bangalore and they said, you know, we want to bring this atmosphere of Prashanthi Nilayam. There was no Prashanthi Nilayam even at that time. The atmosphere of Swami back with us to Bangalore. So what shall we do? So they said, why not start Thursday bhajans? At least one day in a week, let us start singing these songs in our own homes. So these eight families, my aunts and uncles who first went to Swami, decided to have a Thursday bhajan by rotation. Every Thursday, one family would have a bhajan. And in those days, India was still not an independent India. So there was curfew, there was war going on, there were no lights, people were not allowed to go on the streets because of the war that was going on. But they still said, Sai Ram will take care of us and we will go. So they started, this was in the year 1943, they started to do their Thursday bhajans. Every other family member in their own families thought they were crazy. They didn't believe in Swami. They said, what are you all doing? On the faith of some 16-year-old boy in Puttaparthi, like I said yesterday, a boy who comes from a family that eats non-vegetarian food, who's not a Brahmin boy, who's never gone to school, you are going to do what he asks you to do? But that faith had grown a little bit stronger in their hearts, and they said, no, we have to do this. It doesn't matter if these family members discard us, but we have to stick together, these eight families. So they started to do their bhajans. And for 1 year, they did these bhajans every Thursday, come what may. Rain, sunshine, started at 7 o'clock in the evening, finished at 9 o'clock, and walked home. Quite far distances. After 1 year was over, they decided that we have successfully, for 1 year, completed a cycle of bhajans. Let us do a 24-hour bhajan. That is how the idea of the Akhanda Bhajan that we do, the 24-hour bhajan, started. They said, for 24 hours, let us do nothing but Namasmarana, because that faith in us needs a fence. Because the family members have discarded us, our friends have discarded us, the only person we have is this little Sai. So we have to put a fence. So let's do a 24-hour bhajan. So they wanted Swami's permission, and of course in those days these were the only eight families that were there that would visit Swami in Puttaparthi, in the little old mandir. So they wrote a letter to my grandfather who was living there, saying, we are planning to do a 24-hour bhajan and we would like to have Swami's permission to do the bhajan. And we will do it in one of our houses. And they had no plans, and they were very traditional Orthodox people. So they said, you know, we will start on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock and they would completely fast till the following morning, Friday morning, 10 o'clock. Not like our Akhand Bhajans, is it? We usually have a Bhojan Akhand Bhajan. Not here in the UK, in Washington DC. So they would fast the whole 24 hours. Their only food was the Namasmarana. Their only food was the bhajan. They would have a little bit of coffee or hot milk or something to keep their throats going. Remember, there were only three or four or five singers. So they had to sing all through the day. And then in the morning, at 10 o'clock, when the bhajan ended, they would do a little abhishek for Swami. And they would do the aarti and end. And at that time, they would break the fast with a little bit of prasad. Some rice or whatever they were going. This was the plan. So they wrote this letter to Swami, to my grandfather actually, saying that this is what we're planning to do. Please take Swami's permission if it is possible for, is it okay for us to do this? And they waited eagerly and they got a letter, this time from Swami, saying it's a wonderful idea, this 24-hour Akhanda Bhajan. In fact, he named it Akhanda Bhajan. And it's a wonderful idea and I will be there. Which is the date? This is usually we used to do it in the month of February. So these guys were a little taken aback, the relatives. What do you mean? What does he mean? He's coming. We didn't invite him. We're just going to keep the picture there. If he comes, it's a problem. We'll have to look after him. He's going to bring a few people from Puttaparthi. We'll have to look after them. And they were all middle-class people, staying in little homes, small houses. They couldn't believe that they would have to look after Swami in their small house, could not give him all the facilities that they would love to give him. They didn't have a car to bring him from Puttaparthi to Bangalore. So they wrote back saying, no, no, we didn't invite Swami. We just want permission to do the Akhanda Bhajan in our own way, the way we want to do it. That's all. Wonderful Swami. They wrote the letter and they're still waiting for this permission when they get a telegram. And the telegram says, Bail there in Amo. That means we have already left Puttaparthi. So they were in a quandary. So they had to come. Now what are they going to do? This whole business of doing it in somebody's house is gone. Because they have to look after Swami. He is going to stay in the house. It was a little house, small house. So if Swami is staying there, how are we going to do all this? We have to take care of him. So hurriedly, they start looking for a hall, a community hall, which would allow them to do this. So they pulled together a little bit money and my father, who was just a new dentist at that time, you know, 21 or 22 years of age, hadn't even started practice, you know, just about started practice, you know, found a place a little bit in the outskirts of Bangalore, and then they had to find a place for Swami to stay. And, you know, they went and spoke to the one of the people with the bigger houses amongst the relatives so that he could stay. And they said, what are we going to do? We were going to fast from Thursday morning to Friday morning, but you can't have Swami fasting all the time. So somebody has to be at home to cook for him and make sure that he's all right. And who's going to bring him from the house to the bhajan hall? You know, which is quite far away. It was about 10 kilometers or whatever. Nobody had a car. So while all this discussion is going, who should arrive in a horse cart but Swami and my grandfather? They've already arrived. They've come all the way from Puttaparthi in that fashion that I described to you yesterday. Crossed the river, got into a bullock cart, took the train, got into a horse cart and arrived at my father's house on Wednesday afternoon. We are here. Problem. He's a day early. Swami, we are still setting up the hall. Oh, is that true? Then I want to come and see this hall. So they all get into this horse tanga, as we call them in Bangalore. And they all go over to the hall. And there is a picture of Swami's. A little picture, a black and white picture of Swami's. And Swami says, oh, this picture is not nice. I don't look too good in this picture. Let's get a better one. So he materializes a bigger picture and says, let's put this one. So somebody hurriedly goes and puts a little cardboard frame around it. And then he gets into the whole process of setting up the stage. Look at this beautiful stage. Somebody has done a wonderful job. Creates such a beautiful atmosphere in this hall. So that's what they were trying to do. Create that atmosphere. And Swami is there busily putting the garland, busily helping them spread out the sheets. And it was his bhajan. The reason I am giving you this description is that Swami says, don't leave God behind in your altar when you go out to work. Take him along with you. Take me along with you. Whatever you're doing, make me a part of your life. You're setting up the altar, take me there. I enjoy it too with you. Because if there's love in your heart for me, I enjoy it. So that's what he was showing these people. Take me with you to set up that altar, even if it's my altar. I'll show you how you can concentrate on this picture, because they were all just new aspirants in this path. They didn't know anything much. They were all housewives, not very much educated, just knew that their duties were to look after their families, the ladies. The men were busy with their own work. So he busily did all this. And then they said, Swami, you have to go back to the house because that's where the food is. Swami said, what are you all going to do? We are fasting. He said, oh, is that true? That's good. It's good to discipline your body and your mind, at least for a short while, once in a while. And he goes back. And now, as soon as Swami leaves, you know, Swami says in every discourse, and all of you have heard, I'm sure, or at least read, intane, kantane, jantane, ventane, yappudu untano, I'm always behind you, besides you, with you, in you, in front of you, I'm always with you. And those are such beautiful words. We come out of the Prashanthi Nilayam discourse and say, Swami spoke so well. Of course he did. He's the Veda Mata. He created this world. Of course he spoke well. Is that why he said that? No, he really means it. And that's the idea that I want to bring with me this morning, that when we say that Swami is here, it's just not a figure of speech. He is really here. He hears every word I say. He knows every thought that you're thinking. And at one time or the other, you will come to know that he knows, as I have. So Swami went away to the house to rest because he had come from Puttaparthi, and these ladies who were organizing the whole thing, and I'm sure Shobhana will understand what I'm saying, were in a frenzy. They said, what are we going to do? We just have a little bit of rice for tomorrow morning's prasadam. There was a curfew, there was rationing of rice because the war was going on. The shops are all closed in the evening. How are we going to make sure that there is enough prasadam for everybody since Swami has come? Because guess what started to happen? While these guys were setting up the hall, suddenly, people from nowhere started to come and said, I believe there is a bhajan tomorrow. Is this the place? So they said, who are you? This is supposed to be a family gathering. Who told you? They said, oh, we've come all the way from Mysore because Swami came in our dream and told us to come. So not only does he show up, he starts telling people in their dreams to show up. So people from Mysore arrived, a gathering of 15 people. People from Madras arrived, a gathering of 25 people with young children. People from Hyderabad arrived, and suddenly this hall, which was supposed to have 15 and a half people, now had some 45 people, and these people had rice enough to make prasadam for 20 people. And they are in a mess there. What are we going to do? Because we've collected the rice, there's no place to go. So this old lady, this old aunt of mine, who lived in Puttaparthi all her life, she was my mother's aunt actually. She knew Swami since he was a small boy of 5. She was almost motherly to him because Swami used to go to her house to eat vegetarian food. So she was like a mother to him, but at the same time, her name is also Savitramma, but not the same coffee powder Savitramma that you read in the Satyam Shivam Sundaram. In fact, the coffee powder lady came a little bit later. But she was there and she had access to Swami in a way. She knew that he was divine, but at the same time she was very motherly to him because she knew him since he was a little boy of 5. So she walks into the house where Swami is sitting on the chair and says, Swami, this is all your fault. We didn't ask you to come, you show up. Not only do you come, you go and tell people in their dreams to come. And now we have 75 people in this hall and we have no rice to make prasadam tomorrow morning for so many people. And the bhajan is going to start in a few hours. And people are just coming in with bags and baggages because it's 24-hour bhajan. So she said that we are going to be put to shame because in India, you know, the hospitality, if somebody comes, the guests, you look after them well. And you're going to put us to shame. And she said, remember, if you put us to shame, you are to be put to shame too. Because it is you that we believe in. So she said, she grabs, I mean, these are all stories that I have heard too. I wasn't there in 1944. This is the one time you always wish you were older. So she grabs his arm, the 17-year-old boy, and says, come on. And takes him to the bag of rice, 20 kilos or whatever it was that they had, and said, say Akshayam. Say that it will be an endless supply. Or we will be put to shame. So Swami materializes a few grains of rice, puts it into the bag and says, Akshayam, Akshayam, Akshayam. Don't worry, Sundaramma. This is my father's cousin. Don't worry. Everything will be fine. Why are you worried? The doubts, you know, sways you. They were new devotees too. They were just a year old devotees. So they were afraid. Their ego was saying, what are we going to do? People will say we didn't give them food. And the Swami has put us into trouble. Who is going to look after us? Then they said, but who else do we have but him? So let's ask him. And they brought him to the bag and he said, Akshayam. So the bhajan went on. And Swami in the old days, and even when I was a young child, in our Akhand Bhajan, Swami would himself sing the bhajans. He would start the bhajans, sing in the middle of the bhajans. So the bhajan started. It went on for 24 hours. And Swami was there for the most part of it. And then the following morning, Swami materialized a little Shirdi Sai Baba, a statue. And to that statue, for the first time, he materialized that flow of vibhuti that you see in the videos now that Swami does during Dasara celebrations and birthday celebrations. But this was the first time he had a little pot, it's the same wooden pot that was brought, and he materialized all that vibhuti that became the abhishek for that Shirdi Sai Baba. That is why the Paramam Pavitram that you all repeat and you say so beautifully in English, the flow of vibhuti, the translation of it, was composed by my cousin on that day. When they saw the flow of vibhuti coming out of that pot. So the vibhuti abhishekam was over, and of course now the prasad distribution started. The rice was prepared into a sweet dish and they started to distribute, and Swami said, are you all okay? Are you distributing the prasadam? Yes, Swami. So he said, okay, I will go back to the house. When all the ladies finish distributing the prasadam, you come back to the house. And he looks at my aunt, Sundaramma, and says, why were you worried about going to the market when the Kalpavruksha, the wish-fulfilling tree, is right in your house? You were planning to go to the market to buy. Don't worry about the prasadam. And he goes home. So the prasadam distribution started at 10:30 in the morning, and it was a wonderful prasadam because, you know, Swami had materialized that rice and put it in. So they started to distribute. The 75 people were fed. The surrounding village was fed, the neighboring village was fed, and the prasadam is still there. Now this is prasadam, remember they are traditional people, they will never throw it away, but their arms are aching from serving. And Swami is sitting in my father's house telling my father and my grandfather, those ladies will never complain again about food. Now, first they complained that there was not enough food. Now they are complaining that there is too much food because their arms are aching from distributing the prasad. Finally, the old lady, Savitrama, comes back and says, Swami, enough of your game now. Stop it. Stop the increasing of food because we are tired of serving. They had served 300 or 400 or 500 people in the neighboring villages and still there was food left.
And I came back with the answer that a passport document or nationalization or register does not make you an Indian or another national. It is simply a matter of convenience of life. I mean, as Baba said, the true Indian is a person, Bharatiya, who carries the divine values in his heart. So I stuck to that principle. And I recalled his stories of five mothers, motherland being just one, and four others were still with me. So I finally decided to take up the Japanese nationality. But the reason for the change of name is less than 1% of Japanese population speaks English. Before the war, there was 0.1% of people who used to speak English. Because like in France, we're a very nationalistic nation. Mm-hmm. But in 60 years after the war, it went up 10 times from 0.1% to 1%. So when a foreign person has a Japanese nationality, they can't write his names in alphabets because our script is calligraphy-like. When you draw, which if you want to write a river, you just simply draw two banks and a water in between. So it's like kanji. These are pictorial characters is comprised in our script. So, if one had to write my name in the Japanese language, it would be very funny if it was literally translated, like Kamalesh means the lotus, and Asia means the king of the lotus, and Punjab, then they have to write five rivers and so forth, so it's a bit too out of place. And the bureaucratic offices, since there were no computers, and they can't write in the alphabets, we had to change the name by law, and that was very trying. So there is a Hindu temple on top of the Mount Hira in Shiga Prefecture, which is near to Kyoto, the old capital. And there's a Vishnu temple on top of that mountain. As you know, most of the Indian gods came to Japan with Lord Buddha's teachings about 1800 years ago. So that temple, there was a priest who calculated all the names of my Indian names and ancestral names, and they gave me a name called Hira Duko. Hira is the name of the mountain on which the temple stands. And Duko, Ryu means the dragon, and Ko means tiger. And the word Ryu means the dragon, as you know, has originated in the Indian mythology and then gone to the eastern countries. And Ko, tiger, or the lion, which sits next to Baba, it needs no definition. So the dragon represents prosperity in the Eastern culture, and the lion represents, or the tiger represents, the strength, which I don't have both. I don't have prosperity and I don't have strength. So,
oh, you're being very modest.
So perhaps that's the name.
You live up to your name. Now, as an eminent businessman and as a leading hotelier, you're in the thick of the service industry. How has knowing Baba influenced or helped you to get where you are? And has it transformed your business practices and outlook to a more love-all, serve-all perspective? The 15,000 days that you've been with him?
Well, about the Baba's influence and how it helped me to get or where I wanted to get. Well, my belief is that Baba is the absolute and the ultimate shareholder of our business or of our empire. And every empire in the world, he is the true and ultimate owner or the shareholder. Some people realize that earlier, some realize that later. So the fortunate ones know, and the others have yet to discover. Because Baba is the owner of the business, business itself becomes a sadhana, or the business itself becomes a spiritual exercise. So to discover the divine munificence in business is the real purpose of business. That realization crumbles the ego of the greatest entrepreneur in all ages once she realizes that God, Baba, is the doer of all the achievements, which I experienced uncountable times. Whenever I had to make any important decisions, I would physically ask him, and he would guide more as master of my own business or the owner of my own business rather than as a God. So,
and all those guidances that you received, they all worked in your favor?
Well, absolutely. I just cannot describe to you a number of times. But what is more important is not only the huge amount of profits that he grants, but how he protects you from the losses. One of the most impressive incidents which I physically and personally asked him, in the 1980s early, Japan was very affluent, more than now. And it was aggressively investing in foreign countries. And I have a small business of hotels. And so there was a transaction, or rather well-known throughout the world. It was called property which belonged to the Standard Chartered Bank, located at number 1 Wireless Road. It's a huge property of some 80,000 rai. And the Standard Chartered Bank was acquired by some of the Eastern people. And the bank was experiencing great difficulty, so they wanted to sell the land. And being a bank, they have to sell the land by a public auction. So I was invited in the auction. Our company was invited. The process is rather strict for very large auctions. And I was very emphatic because the land was the prime place just near the Imperial Palace. And one cannot have it again. It's like a very precious piece of land for any development of multi-stories.
Is it in Tokyo?
No, it's in Bangkok.
Bangkok. Thailand. Okay.
Yeah, in Thailand. It's called Number 1 Wireless Road was the name of the asset. And we were shortlisted to buy, which means amongst the first five people. And we took a team of about 50 people to do the analysis, and we made a bid of $800 million for just the land, because the bank had to be rescued. And after making the bid for that land, we were shortlisted amongst the best three. So we were invited at the regional head office of the bank in Hong Kong to negotiate the details. And when I had asked Baba that I want to do this transaction, that we will be building three huge towers, one was a hotel, one was an office block, and one was a residential block. Each one would be about 100 stories, and perhaps one of the most impressive development. And he said, yes, yes, you can do it. So I had great confidence, and I was proceeding full steam ahead with taking 50 people from Japan, staying there months doing the analytical work, and we came on the table to negotiate the final terms. But I was asked at that time that the monies should be paid in third countries to save taxes to the King of Thailand. And we couldn't do that because it was a very high-profile public project. So I started to pray to Baba that how come you blessed the project and I'm facing these impediments. Well, anyway, they gave us one day. There are three people by us to make a decision whether you would like to accept the terms of an offshore payment. The reason of offshore payment was because when the Standard Chartered Bank, as you know, Thailand was being ruled by American England, by the Allied forces. So the Standard Chartered Bank was established there for a longer time, and the book value of their land was only $1. So if they were to offer the land for sale, the entire amount would go into taxation, and the yield to the bank would be rather small. I'm talking this in due respect of morality and ethics to all my friends in the Standard Chartered Bank. It is not to bring the bank's immoral points. So when we came to the decision that we cannot bid this, much to my disappointment, the bidder was another Japanese firm which acquired. And I was very dejected, and I thought that Swami's blessings are not the right thing to be asked in business. He is more spiritual, and we shouldn't ask him about business things. So this particular person, they did this adharma of paying in the third country of offshore, and it was a huge high-profile project. All the construction was completed and opened. And after 3.5 years, the promoters were arrested for doing the adharma of the offshore payments. And not only that, 7 years later, which means 10 years when the project started, the property market in that country crashed. So the just land alone was about $700 odd million. And the 300-story buildings combined would be about $2.5 billion. Because of the Japanese boom which had contracted, the crash was so much that the value of all the assets went one-third.
Oh.
So this just shows that how Swami protects without asking. And when he says yes, he says yes in terms of protection, not in the human sense of greed and desire. So there is a firm belief of not to do anything in life without consulting the real owner of the business, which is God himself. So that is one of the experience. But I just want to mention that that just crumbles the ego of the greatest entrepreneur in all ages. You know, one cannot only feel or think that Baba is the owner, but one has to really practice the detachment from wealth and power. So one day...
Is it hard?
Yeah, in the beginning it is hard, but once you become habituated, it is much more easier to put the blame on Baba. Because he knows what he's doing right, and you realize, actually it's not a blame, but it's the greatest blessing. But
the responsibility is his.
Yeah. So one day Baba gave us permission, talking about his influence, to visit the overseas countries to introduce the super specialty hospital projects and later the water projects. So Brother Indulal Shah, the founder of the Satya Sai organization, myself, Dr. Sapphire and Justice P.N. Bhagwati, we went to London and we made a presentation at the Wimbledon Theatre about Swami's Seva projects, talking about this detachment and Seva. So Although for the first time in my life I got some kind of a standing ovation for this Baba's talk, it was only due to Swami's grace. But the work was only half done with that talk. The main point of my visit was to bring the awareness of the primary duty of detachment from wealth and for the people there to make contribution to the worthy cause of Swami's projects. But the second half was to actually see the results of the donations to implement these massive projects in those days. And I felt that I had let down Baba from my responsibility of arranging those resources for the divine projects, because all the people, they listened to the talks, but they were not, you know, being detached and sending as much as they should or they could. So I was depressed, and I consulted my wife that what shall we do? And I said, we should sell our house in Tokyo and do our duty to Bhagwan, because he has given us the responsibility to go there and talk. So I took the estimates of the most reputed real estate agent, and they said that the minimum price if we could sell our house would be about $20 million. So I flew to Baba, and he was most gracious to call me for an interview. I told him, Swami, that I have failed in my duty of putting enough of the resources from other parts of the world, and people have not made their contributions. So I have decided to sell my house, and we will transfer the money for the divine projects of the hospital or whatever it was. Then Baba looked into my eyes, and with the greatest ease, he told me, do not sell your house. Then he said a statement, which in his words, he says, which mother will allow her son to stay in a rented house?
Uh-huh.
So we see here that those who surrender everything to Bhagwan, for them, wealth is only a spiritual tool of divine seva. So also the other lesson of the business being influenced by Baba is that Bhagwan does not want anyone's resources.
How do you say that when all the projects that are run here for humanitarian purposes are fueled and funded by donations from devotees?
Yes, he does not want their donations or he does not want their resources. Mm-hmm. He is only a giver. He never takes. And he said once in the interview room, if Bhagwan wills, there will be a rain of rupees. These are his words. So we see that Baba's main message is complete and absolute detachment has to be learnt and practiced by every businessman by keeping all the financial, human and technical and other resources at the divine lotus feet. When he says, when he takes a project, he does not depend on anybody's donations or anyone's contributions, because he knows that what is going to happen and before he takes. But as you know, which is a well-known story most of you must be knowing, he used to talk very frequently to move people to detachment, to sacrifice, to tyaga, for contributing to these various humanitarian projects. One day, we were sitting just outside his room, and a school student gave him a letter. So he asked the student, may I open this letter and read to everybody? But the student was very shy. Swami opened the letter and read, and it is in the formal discourse also. The boy's letter said, O Bhagwan, every day you are giving discourses that people should make contributions of sacrifice and detachment. I'm from Calcutta, and my mother sends me 100 rupees to pay to the dhobi to wash the clothes in school. However, I cannot donate money because I come from a poor family. Mm-hmm. I will start washing these clothes by myself, and if you can buy one brick with those 100 rupees and put in that, I have done my seva or my duty to listening to Baba. A child has written that. So we see the purpose of Swami informing the projects to people is not at all to collect donations. God never takes, he only gives. He is absolute, you see. So it is only the humanitarian projects are the process to the people of detachment. And he gave a great message about the definition of detachment. He says, what is attachment and detachment? He said that deep attachment to God is detachment. So we see the only influence of Swami in business is to surrender that the business belongs to him. He is the chairman and the shareholder, and we're just his humble servants, and to continue working in his teachings.
Including following ethics, where you lost such a huge deal in Thailand, for
yes,
example.
Yes.
In the process, you gained, because you would have been a victim of the huge loss.
Yeah, well, I would be on the street.
Such a huge loss. I understand. Sir, a person of your means can easily educate his children in the most prestigious of private schools anywhere in the world. Now, your daughter has studied in Baba's school in Prashantinilayam, and your son continues to be a Baba student, a Sai student in Puttaparthi. Would you like to explain your choice to our listeners?
Well, why I chose the Satya Sai school? You have put 2 points in your question. One is there are so many prestigious schools in the world. The other is why I chose.
Because your children can be studying where royalty studies.
Yes, well, the educational institutions of Bhagwan are the most prestigious, rather the only prestigious schools in the whole world. The prestige of a school is comprised by academic standards, or it is sports standards, or by standards of character building. If the Sai schools were to participate in the grading process, or the global grading process of the world's best institutions, they will all have a global standard which will be the highest. So I have seen, I have experienced, and I have worked myself to receive my own satisfaction, and I'm convinced that the Sai school is the world's most prestigious school.
I feel like clapping to that, because I completely agree with that. I thought I was the only enthusiast.
Well, you see, the significance of the Sai school, each teacher, as you know, is a guru in the true sense. I mean, of removing the darkness, the ignorance. So the guru delivers the child the illumination of wisdom. So we see that the present Satya Sai schools, Bhagwan has chosen teachers of no less caliber. You know, they are saints in trousers.
And saris.
Yeah, and saris, please pardon me. But Bhagwan has chosen the world's best teachers to be the gurus in his institutions. Baba has chosen today those teachers who will have the privilege to carry his mission, you see. So we see the teachers continue even today in that same tradition, and I'm sure this will continue forever in the Sai schools, because that is his sankalpa. Also, we have the example of the sage Valmiki. So he was a transformed teacher, and who taught the Ramayana to the divine children of Mother Sita, the Lava and Kusha. And later, Lava and Kusha, they sang the divine story of Ramayana during the Ashwamedha Yajna congregation. And at that time, Lord Sri Ramachandra confirmed what was sung by these two children is true. Even today, all the Sai students sing and extol the glory of Avatar. So there is no difference between the Valmiki, the Vashishta and Sandipani and the present Sai schools. There is no difference. The only difference is that it is happening in the present age and we are able to witness this. But somebody has to academically study the process and analyze and scholastically put it in that framework. Then we have the similarity of the Sai teachers who resemble the highest ideals of the iconic teacher, Sage Vashishta. We see the ideal teachers of Lord Rama. And when we see Sage Vashishta, he has established the system of Gurukula, starts from him, the residential college, on the banks of River Bias, and he was taking care of thousands of students in those days. So today, Sai schools are similarly located on the holiest of the river Chitravati. And each principal of the school is a sage who has undergone the penance of surrendering their entire lives, 24 hours, 365 days, only for the welfare of Sai children. The Sai principals and the teachers have done more than the parents can do. They have surrendered their entire lives. So I have no question in my mind that I have done the best choice and this will continue till I am able to deliver my promise to Swami that the first Japanese citizens to become Sai students, my children, I had prayed to Bhagavan that they will do the seva of bringing the Sai ideal education to Japanese schools. It may take another 30 or 40 years, but I have chosen that school for my children because I prayed intensely to Baba for 8 years to please accept them. And for 8 years, he couldn't accept them. And after he blessed them with this highest boon one can get is to become a Sai student. And also I'm quite sure that for my own personal reasons about not choosing a Japanese school. Because as you know, Japan was defeated in the Second War. And General MacArthur wrote the new Japanese constitution, which we have today, which prohibits spiritual or religious education. Even the Japanese public schools, they cannot learn about their own spiritual or religious values. This was done to maintain the supremacy over a defeated nation by suppressing the nationalism, you see, national values or epics and ethos. So the Shinto and the Buddhist and other religions were prohibited from the syllabus in the consequence, you know, very scholastic, very materialistic Japanese society with no spiritual base in the educational system. Of course, there were excellent private schools which I could have sent to Christian schools, Buddhist or the Shinto faiths, but there is nothing to match the requirement of an ideal Indian school. So we prayed to Bhagavan and he granted our boon.
Beautiful to hear that from a parent of a Satisai student, actually two students. Now your family is very committed to Bhagavan and your wife, Mrs. Kayoko Hira, she heads the Institute of Satisai Education. All this work is very time consuming. It requires deep commitment, as does, I'm sure, your vast business empire. Where do the Hiras draw their inspiration from and how do they manage their time to get so much done? You're all a family of overachievers.
Well, I think I don't fit that comment of yours, but about how to draw inspiration is, you know, the very word inspire is the motivation of the inner spirit, as you know, the inner aspirations. The secret of finding time and deep commitment comes from the Jyoti meditation. The Dhyanavahini is the theory of success, because without concentration, you cannot take one step in life. So the Dhyanavahini is the theory of success, which helps every entrepreneur.
So do you practice Jyoti meditation every day?
Yes, madam. And this Jyoti meditation is for three things it gives: the breath, the thought, and the time. So when we do Jyoti meditation, the life source of our breath is regulated, which involuntarily controls the thought process. And it brings a tremendous speed of action, which saves a lot of time that can be used for Sai Seva. So the simplest theories of Bhagavan grant infinite rewards. And, you know, there are seven steps which are put. The first is the environment. The breath comes from the environment. So if you're in good environment, good thoughts come. So he said satsanga all the time, be in good place. Then the breath itself, which conveys the thoughts. Mm-hmm. And the thoughts themselves lead to the so-called willpower, the Ichcha Shakti, to do something. And from that Ichcha, we come to the Kriya Shakti, to do the actual action power. And from that, our habit or character is formed. And that habit or character decides the destiny of man, you see. So in these seven processes of this Dhyanavahini, you come in business especially, it's one of the most handy tools and the easiest to take care.
You know, that's the best analysis of spirituality in business that I have heard. Very nicely said. And it's amazing to hear it from a person who actually practices it.
Well, I still have to go a long way. I'm still greedy in spirituality, but it's just one step.
It's a good greed to have, spiritual greed, I guess. Now, let's talk about this interview that you had with Baba one time. And Swami told you specifically that youth is very important and he gave you three ideals for a youth: respect for parents, respect for teachers, and respect for...
with Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live. Radio Sai.